Absolutely.
There he is.
Sorry about that. I was testing the audio to make sure it worked, and then it would not stop. And so you guys tried to call me, and the call music was mixing with the... ...fucking test music, and so I just shut it down and restarted it.
I think that all translates into wham, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah, okay. Just checking.
You're the tech guy.
Just wanted to make sure.
That's a Chris thing.
Oh, fuck that bullshit.
Yeah.
I have a very definite skill set.
Yeah.
Don't involve you guys. Fuck you guys.
He has a very specific skill set that's been honed over many years. If you anger him, he will find you. He will find you, and he will ruin your CSS files.
So. Oh, you do that, Brandon. You have that particular skill set.
Dude, I haven't wrecked anything. I haven't messed with them.
Yeah, that's smart of you, actually.
Yes.
I do like how you call me for the most basic things. Smart, but...
Well, because I've learned my lesson. If I try to do some of those most basic things, I tend to make rather extraordinary screw-ups out of them.
Easy to do.
Yes.
It's much easier than people think.
Yes. So, rather than have some extraordinary screw-ups, I prefer to focus on the mundane screw-ups, and I let you do the extraordinary ones.
Oh, and I do them quite well.
Yes. Yes. So, alright, so this is our final episode for Season 3 of Mentioned in Dispatches. We do need to briefly take a moment and celebrate the fact that we are on iTunes now. I don't know if you guys saw the announcement.
I love it.
We are on iTunes. So anyone who is listening and you know, to the both of you that are actually on here, like, go to iTunes and go give us a rating. You know, if you think we're worth 5 stars, great. And if you don't, give us 5 stars anyway. But give us a rating, because we got to get like at least 25 ratings or something like that before we'll actually start showing up in the recommendation engine. Like, people can always search for us, and that's fine, but to actually show up in the recommendation engines, you've got to have a certain number of ratings indicating that, like, there's actually people listening and care. So, you know, we're going to shamelessly beg for folks to actually get out there and, like, give us a rating so that we can start showing up on the iTunes recommendations. And I know a lot of people, like, totally hate Apple stuff. Chris, you're one of them. That's fine. But the, you know, iTunes does drive a lot of traffic for podcasts. So,
hey, I tried to pimp this thing on Twitter, you know, to my couple hundred followers.
Yeah. Hey, I was on another one of those stupid podcasts. Please, you know, pretend to listen. Please. It sort of worked. So yeah, we've got Chris with you. Chris, how many shots in are we at this point?
Shots? We're not into any shots. I'm into like the third or fourth glass of Chillable Red. So there we go.
Okay.
And my God, how many of this season have I been on? Like, I've been like a 30-40%. So,
at least, maybe more. We'd have to go back and look.
Yeah, I'll still do that.
But it's not insignificant amount. And maybe only one of them sober. So,
I want some co-host kickback or something.
You can have 50% of whatever I'm making off of this.
Exactly. Fantastic.
And then we also have, from the great wild west, our good buddy the Banzai Cat himself, Howdy Michael.
Howdy. Yeehaw.
Yeehaw. So,
I like the enthusiasm.
So let me guess. You've got one neighbor named Zeke and one neighbor named Festus, right?
No, not quite that bad.
No. I guess you're...
Named Rattlesnake and another one named Burrow.
Are you a...
We got a wildlife out here.
But you're moving into a subdivision full of transplants, right?
That's a good question. I think so. I've not had time to really socialize.
Haven't had time or haven't made time?
Wait, you don't have a gaming group or anything? Come on.
I did, actually. I've got the neighbors across the street and another guy, but we haven't had a chance to meet up yet because we haven't had a table. And I finally have a table now. I just need to find time to do that. So it's always something. I'm just making excuses.
Yeah, but you're almost there where you like have other humans to play with.
Yeah, it's overrated. I mean, you get him to the table, you're not going to get anything that exciting to the table. It's going to be Wingspan or Flashpoint or Wing Leader.
Games all over the place. Come on.
They're good games. Don't get me wrong. But just our crowd, I don't think would care much about Wingspan. That's all.
I don't know. I mean, I've been fascinated by your attempts to repurchase Hunt for Red October.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad that fascinated you. I like the game. I played it once a long time ago, and I hated it. And
now you're going to rewrite the rules for it.
Well, it's just something I'm playing around with. It's not a big deal. I don't know how long that's going to take me, and it's just one of those things where I'll go upload it to the file section on BGG. Here you go. Give it a look. Anybody cares, let me know. If not, whatever. I mean, the rules are kind of messed up. I love doing that kind of thing anyway. If I see something that's unorganized, and that sounds extremely boring and dull, but hey, that's what technical writers
those
do.
Those games were fun for what they were.
And I don't want to.
Extremely boring and dull now, but.
It looks like it's a fun game. You even said it was a fun game.
It was fun when I played it 30 years ago. I mean.
Yeah, well, like I said, I hated it back then, but now the more and more I'm just kind of more into that 80s conflict kind of a thing. And
like the reverse me.
I know. Yeah, I'm sober now, so.
Wow. Sorry for you.
Yeah, I know, right? I just haven't had a chance to drink tonight. I've got sparkling water here.
Let's also acknowledge that thanks to the miracle of time zones, Chris has like a 3-hour head start on you.
Yeah, that's true.
So
it's true. Are we going to talk about like old retro games? What are we talking about tonight?
You want to talk old retro games? We can talk old retro games.
Well, I actually have a soft spot for those TSR games. I really do. I mean,
Chris, what was the first war game you ever played?
Actual real war game?
Yeah, like Risk and Stratego don't count. Like.
Well, does Axis and Allies count?
Yeah, I would count that one.
All right, I would say Axis and Allies was my first actual game. We played that hardcore in high school into college. We played a lot of BattleTech and stuff. The thing is, like after Axis and Allies, I did get into those TSR like Hunt for Red October, Red Storm Rising games. So I own some real war games back then. I bought like Advanced Third Reich when I was, I don't know, like 1989. Not that we ever played it, but if you want to talk about like first war game, like, it's probably Axis and Allies, I guess, what I would say.
What I thought was kind of entertaining with after TSR bought SPI and started re-releasing a bunch of the SPI games under the TSR moniker, under the imprint, there were a lot of folks who saw those Hunt for Red Octobers and Red Storm Risings, you know, a little later, but then earlier on, some of the other ones that they had re-released. And if I recall, one of the earlier ones that they released under the TSR moniker was Air War, which was like one of the most unplayable tabletop war games of all time. And they still, you know, released that one in fairly early on when everybody's like, oh, TSR's coming out with these games that maybe they'll clean them up some and make them a little more appealing to role-playing folks, who knows? And then they put one of the most mathematically impenetrable games out there first. And it's like, what the hell were they thinking?
I gotta say, that Hunter for October game was pretty neat looking as an intermediate war. I mean, I didn't approach that as a war game. I approached that as like a gamer. It had some cool stuff going for it. I'm not gonna say it was a great game. I mean, it had its issues, and I mean, we played it and we tried to play it, and I'm pretty sure we house ruled it. But you know, at the time that it was put out, that was a pretty neat little game. I mean, and I wasn't a hardcore. I was definitely not an Avalon Hill gamer or anything else at that point.
Well, but I think one of the keys with that is it wasn't necessarily trying to be the most realistic sub warfare sort of game out there. It was trying to give you the game experience of the book.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, I thought it had some neat mechanics for that. And honestly, you know, the thing is, the way they did it with the cardboard, the cardboard foldovers and you put them into the base. And
yeah, there was a little bit of arts and crafts to it.
There was. I mean, I have to say, you know, looking back for 30 years and approaching it from a newcomer's perspective, it had some neat things to it. It had some neat mechanics. I own both games. I played them a bunch of times, and, you know, none of us knew what we were doing. I don't think any of us read the rules really that depthly. We played it, and we had fun, and I'm sure I look back at it now, I'm like, what the hell is this? And, you know, BC, I know you mentioned that you're looking at, like, the rules have holes that you want to fill, which I don't doubt that. I mean, I never took them as deep, like, wargaming experiences.
Right, yeah, it's not a deep game by any stretch, and I wasn't really looking to change anything in it, just kind of restructure it and see if it makes more sense that way. Add a few bells and whistles. Like I said, that one post I made in the forum asking what an FFL was, a light frigate, and what makes that different from a regular frigate, because that's one of the unit types in the game. And I thought, yeah, it might help to put a little brief explanation here for somebody who doesn't know what the hell that is, because that's what the game is. It's just barely touches on some of these subjects, and it might be interesting to people to look into that kind of thing. And considering too that Hunt for Red October is 8 scenarios in it, and only one of them is the real movie Hunt for Red October, where the sub is escaping. The other 7 are pretty much Red Storm Rising. And
I say, you know, it was a book before it was a movie, right?
Oh yes, absolutely. Okay. I know. No, but, I mean, the movie many times.
To what he's saying, I mean, the game itself. I mean, I owned the game at one point. But to what you're saying is, you're buying the game Hunt for Red October. There's really only one scenario that's the Hunt for Red October. The rest of it is just kind of generic, you know.
Right.
What especially scenarios.
Yep, especially the last 2 or 3 scenarios. I can't remember offhand, but the last one definitely is the full game. And then there's even rules in there, of course, to combine that one with Red Storm Rising, which I'd really love to do if I could get a copy of the damn game, Red Storm Rising.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I got to say, 30 years ago, you know, 1989, that was a pretty neat concept to
Absolutely.
Those two games together, you know.
There's an eBay listing for Red Storm Rising at about $45.
What's that?
There's an eBay listing for Red Storm Rising.
Yeah, I stay away from eBay. eBay pissed me off once about 10 years ago, and I have never been back to it.
I'm just saying, there's...
I mean, I love those games. I owned them and foolishly sold them, but I mean, I can't see paying more than like $20 for each
one. Yeah, that's, like I said, I found somebody on BGG that said, yeah, I like your Imperial Assault and your Rebellion, Star Wars Rebellion. I'm like, I'm not trading those for Red Storm Rising, I'm sorry.
Sure, yeah. The games that are worth like 4 times more than the game I'm offering you, yeah.
And considering both are unplayed, they're mint. I'm not really willing to get rid of those quite yet. My daughter's boyfriend expressed interest in playing both of those during Christmas break here, so that might be fun to actually break out a game and play.
If I found one of those games like in shrink, I might pay $40 for one of them. I mean,
well,
otherwise, those are like, you know, find them on a lawn sale, pay somebody $10. And honestly, they're not. Even if you got one, you'd have to find like house rule it and make them work. You know, they're not. They were never great games. They were fun games like 30 years ago.
But
I kind of like the way they, you know, they did the cutouts and the stands and all that.
But isn't that what it's supposed to be? I mean, it's supposed to be a fun game.
Well,
like,
yeah,
that's the point.
God forbid we play games for fun.
I know. Like, whose crazy idea was? I mean, isn't that the whole? You know, is it going to be the most realistic simulation of something?
I'm not going to pay like $100 for like Red Storm Rising from 1989. I'm just not going to, you know. But those, they were fun games. I played them. I had a great time with them. I kicked myself for selling them, honestly.
You know, I also got a Princess Ryan Star Marines in shrink, and that game, that's another old one. I don't know how far down this rabbit hole you want to go.
I can't talk about what you have in shrink.
Well, I bought it in shrink. And
I have this in shrink.
I hope you bought it in shrink, because otherwise that tells us that you've got a shrink wrap machine there that you're counterfeiting your shrink wrap copies of things.
No. You know what's funny is I just about an hour ago I posted to the Consum Marketplace my Tide of Iron collection, because it doesn't look like I'm ever going to get to play that. It's all in Shrink, and it's all sitting there. So quick plug for that. I'm starting to come to terms with some of this crap, and it's just like I'm not going to play it. I need to get rid of it. But there's just some things that I just don't want to do. And I looked at Tide of Iron for the longest time, and I'm like, I really want to play that. But it's just there's too much going on with that. It's got too many pieces. It's too many rules. Too many markers. I'm getting too old, I guess, for that kind of thing. So something like Red Storm Rising, or excuse me, Hunt for Red October, much simpler, much cleaner, much quicker to play.
You were not going to spend the next 4 months rewriting the rules for it.
Well, you know, it's not that bad, big a deal. It's not that long of a rule book. Convert the PDF to Word and boom. Huh?
I know. I used to own it.
Yeah, well, there you go. So, and I only came up with the idea because some of the posts in BGG looked like some people were wanting to do it. And one guy said he would do it, and then he disappeared. He hasn't logged in since October of last year. So I thought, well, okay, maybe I'll do that. But no promises. You know, I'll give it a try. People do that kind of thing all the time on BGG. Here's a new rule set.
I look forward to your enhanced version.
Well, so you're the expert player. I should run it by you then, huh? Well,
you should run it by 12-year-old him.
I knew what an FFL was.
There you go. I did too, but I was like, okay, I looked it up and everything. I'm like, okay, that's really sad. I'm going on to FFL differences between FFL and FF. What the hell? Why can't I find any information? So, okay.
In the list of things that you have to do, I get that selling Tide of Iron is just sort of one of those passive things, like you throw the listing out there and wait for somebody to respond, but where does reformatting and updating the rules for Hunt for Red October fit in your priority list of like five different reviews that you've told me you're sending?
I haven't told you I'm going to do five reviews. What are you talking about? I've got one on the table for Knight Fighter Ace, and then, of course, there's a Lock and Load one that needs to be coming up here.
Yeah, thank you.
But five? Come on. Now, this is very low priority, so don't worry, Brian.
Okay, just checking.
I'll earn my paycheck with you, okay? Don't worry.
Hey, you get it to me quick enough, I'll double it.
Thanks. Gee, that's an incentive there.
I'll double it from
goose egg. Double is double goose egg.
I will put four more zeros on that paycheck, man.
Look at this guy here. Jeez.
Wow.
I know, right? Yeah, don't worry. It's one of those extra things that I just kind of go, ooh, I want to do that. Okay. Just shove that on a shelf somewhere.
So, we'll see when I get to it. Come on. Have you found any, like, are you actually gaming with any local people?
Not yet, no. The last real gaming I did with other people was October. I went to visit my daughter in college and her boyfriend. And that's actually where I found Wingspan at the FLGS there. He was insistent that we go check it out. See, the thing is about her boyfriend is he's, until he met me, he had no idea that there were board games like this. They thought there was Monopoly and Parcheesi and stupid crap like that. And then he saw my collection in my old house and went, holy crap. So,
and he realized it's like, I don't know, Agricola and.
No, I don't have Agricola. But yeah, he's bought games like Azul and several others. So I'm slowly going to get him into wargaming, I think. But if he doesn't want to do it, that's fine. But still, this guy is now suddenly crazy about games like me. My daughter said he's bought 15 to 20 this semester alone.
Good for him.
And, but you live in a major metropolitan area, and you have not met any other gamers.
Let's be clear, Chris. Let's accurately qualify this. It's not that he lives in a major metropolitan area. It's that he lives in the major metropolitan area that hosts the premier wargaming convention every summer.
Well, just to clarify.
Just to clarify. Okay,
but
so
he claims he doesn't have anybody to game with.
No. I do. Here's the thing. Okay, so I've met several people online through Facebook, through the various Consim, or not Consim, but GMT Games and other sources on Facebook. Most of them live in friggin' Mesa, which is on the far other side of town. We're talking an hour and a half at least to get over there. Worse than Houston. So, but the thing is, though, there's another guy that was watching our Saturday Night Fights, and he saw, I guess he heard me say I was in Arizona, and he just kind of messaged me on Steam and said, hey, I've been watching this kind of thing, and we're we got a wargaming club out in Mesa. Would you be interested? And I was like, I don't know, man. I mean, that's I would love to see it. It's mostly minis battles, and that's another thing right there. I'm not really looking to get involved in minis gaming. I did that with X-Wing miniatures, and I never
played it. It's fine as long as it's somebody else's minis.
Well, there's that. So that's what I was thinking.
Well, thank you. Exactly. But
the guy was very nice, and he said that, well, I totally understand that, but I live in Sun City, which is just even further away from Mesa than I am. And he said, you know, if you're ever interested, I'll just drop you a note, and if you want, you can ride out there with me, and we can, you can check out the club and see if you're interested. I was like, oh, well, yeah, I could do that. That sounds interesting. Get me out and actually do some actual wargaming. Go figure. So, yeah, besides playing some games that aren't really wargames, Wingspan and Terraforming Mars in October, I've had Knight Fighter Ace. I've got Interceptor Ace on my table right now, but I'm about to clear that so I can get probably Wake Island by Lock and Load or maybe something else on there. Mostly solitaire stuff, The Lonely Sad Life of a Solitaire Gamer.
Yeah, and at this point, Cyrano has now turned off the podcast.
Well,
why is that? Because we're not talking about Napoleonic minis and all.
No, because you dared to mention solitaire gaming. So, as a note for the boyfriend-in-law there, whatever that guy is relative to you, your daughter's boyfriend. Right now, for where he is in his gaming journey towards Groghood, like I get that he's not a full-on wargamer yet, but if he's interested in some of the more complex strategy style Euro games, through this weekend, Target's got like 40% off on all the ones they carry, and they don't just have like the Risks and Scrabbles of the world. They're stocking stuff like Seven Wonders and Catan and the Munchkin series and all kinds of others that you used to only be able to find at the FLGS. Target's done a pretty good job of stocking a lot of those kinds of games. And through this weekend, look, 40% off of Seven Wonders is no joke because that gets it down into the low 20s, and that's not a bad deal for you know, a game that is one of my favorites.
I'd actually gone by my Target last week to check out their game section. They have quite a bit of games there, but Seven Wonders was sold out. They didn't have any in stock at all.
Well, you can order them online or ship to store at the same price. So...
I'll have to look into that, maybe.
Poke your head in there and take a look. But yeah, they've for role-playing folks out there, Target's got the D&D Starter Set, the D&D Essentials Set, and the D&D Stranger Things Edition all out there that cheap as well. So,
you know, I saw Rick and Morty Dungeons & Dragons.
Probably not at Target,
where I saw that. No, it wasn't at Target. I can't remember where I saw it now, but I saw it online somewhere, and I thought, there's... D&D, what? What are you doing, Dungeons and Dragons? They're marketing themselves, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. They're spreading out to other areas. It just caught me as really odd. It sounds interesting, though, because I really do like Rick and Morty.
Yeah. I know you do. But they've got, like, the at Target, they got Betrayal at House on the Hill. They've got a handful of pretty solid, well-received, different. Now, what they don't have for very many of them... They have a few of the Catan expansions. So, like, you can get the base Catan, and then you can add the Seafarers and the six-player expansion and whatever. But that's, like, the only one of the games that they have the expansions for. They don't carry the Seven Wonders expansions. They don't carry the Ticket to Ride expansions. They don't carry those others. Many of the Munchkin games are compatible with each other, but they're not always... But a lot of them are standalone. So they've got some of those on sale as well. So... It may be worth checking out. It was a couple weeks ago that we talked about the Compass catalog and that sale, but just about everybody else has their Black Friday sales starting. We're starting to see things online for Goodman Games is having theirs. Humble Bundle's having a big sale. Dan Versen just announced his big sale starting this weekend. MMP always has a Black Friday sale going on. So there's a variety of them starting here pretty soon.
Yeah, but everyone has their sales, and let me tell you, I definitely bought games when I was at Compass Con. So can anyone tell me like a game they're excited about right now for a sale?
Well,
that's on sale.
Yeah, I mean seriously, you're like all of a sudden it's the sale, and you're getting what game are you getting? Because I know I'm not. I mean, I bought my game.
Yeah. Well, so. Okay. A bunch of the stuff that's on sale at Target right now, like those Euro ones, like I've got the ones that I would want, In some cases, I've had them for a couple of years, so it would be something that I would be getting as a gift for someone else.
Sure.
Which I'm happy to do depending on the circumstances, but I don't have, you know, I don't need them for myself right now. Quite frankly, you know, you and I were actually messaging back and forth a little bit while you were at Compass, and you were talking about some of the stuff that they had on sale there. And what I realized with the messages you were sending and then pulling open the catalog and looking at it, like all of the stuff that Compass has that I want all comes out in like January. it's all stuff that I may look to use, you know, a little holiday money to pre-order something while they're still on sale. But all the ones I want are all ones that get released next calendar year. Things like the Fold a Gap one that's coming up. Those are the ones that I would be more interested in. They're all a few months in the future. Otherwise, you know, especially for the prices they were selling them at the convention, I'd have totally PayPal'd you $50 and said, yeah, sure, throw that one in the mail to me. But no, I mean, they just...
I get it. I mean, I don't know.
Compass has a bunch of stuff that looks really awesome to me. It's just all stuff that isn't here yet. And yeah,
I've got something on pre-order with them I'm waiting on.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I'm, you know, again... Stop me if you've heard this one. The arrival of World at War 85 from Lock and Load seems to perpetually be imminent. But when it,
oh yeah, David said that's on the way.
It's literally on the slow boat from China.
Yes, well, that's what he said.
I mean, the thing is, that's influenced my game for. I mean, I know that eventually I'm going to get that. So I don't know.
And I backed it at the level where I've got every possible stretch goal coming with it. So there's no lack of coolness to play with.
The thing is, that's like five games coming as one game.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So you know, there's some things that are on the way that I'm excited to have that is sort of limiting how much of what I need to go out and drop change on right now. You know, look, if you've been ASL curious for a while and, you know, the starter kits are already a pretty good deal, but if MMP is going to put them on sale this week, now you've got a chance to go get even another one, you know, or go take the plunge.
Well, honestly, what does get tempting is, like, you know, when I see something from a smaller publisher, like Hollandspiel or something, you know. I will say, I was on Twitter today and I saw, like, you know, somebody posted a great kit from a C3I Roger McGowan Gettysburg thing. And I said, that looked great. And all of a sudden, McGowan's retreating the picture of the Met. You know, I was tempted to get it. I mean, and social media works. Cause I was very close to putting down fucking $40 C3I, you know.
Well, I think...
And I'm sure it's a good game because I have a couple of C3Is that are great looking games. So.
Yeah, I mean, those are... So, for the... you mentioned Hollandspiel. Right now, it's the Hollandaise sale.
Yeah.
Well played. It's $5 off all 46 of their boxed games, including the new one, which is Westphalia, which there's no chance that Michael will ever play because you need six people for it. So, but yeah, I mean, all of the stuff that's out there.
I'll reach that next week. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. But everything that's out there, you can get at like $5 off. So, you know, if you wanted NATO Air Commander or Charlemagne or any of the table battles games or any of the horse and musket stuff, you know, they're out there cheap right now. This is the time to do it.
We're talking about print and play because I don't want to do print and play.
No. So. These are not print and play. So Hollandspiel does, they've got to deal with, they use Blue Panther as their press. And so they're print on demand.
I wasn't shitting on them or talking about them. Sorry, I was.
Yeah, no, but these are print on demand. So
talking on for the print and play game.
Well, I think the print and play thing that you're referencing is one of the guys that hangs in our forums, Panzer Day, is doing some development work for Hollandspiel, and I think while they're doing the development work, it is print and play with the playtest versions of things. So I think that was the print and play they were referring to.
Yes, but certain forum members also seem to be interested in print and play.
Yes. Look, I can assemble a decent-looking set of counters. Folks that have been at Origins have seen some of the counters that I've been able to put together, and they're perfectly fine.
It can't be done. It's just, like...
I'll be honest, it's more work than I feel like doing these days, so...
Yeah, no, I mean, I just pay the money for the game.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, but again, I'm scrolling through Hollandspiel's listings right now, and they've got the whole Horse and Musket series that are all, you know, again, everything's $5 off. But that's what they did. They just did an across the board knockdown of $5. So you're going to make fun of the name, I know, Chris. There is an Agricola Master of Britain, because one of the Roman leaders of Britain was called Agricola. That one's knocked down. Yeah, that one's knocked down from 30 to 25. So as a percentage, that is a higher savings than the ones knocked from 50 down to 45. So
you didn't even ask what I've been playing this
week. Oh wait, we're supposed to care?
Nah, whatever.
So what have you been playing lately, Chris?
We actually played. I got together with a little group and we played a gladiatorial combat game, skirmish level. The rules were called Sons of Mars, which were not great, but we played them and had a fun time. So
swords and sandals kind of stuff?
Yes, yeah, swords and sandals. Yeah, definitely.
Who got to be Maximus?
I got to be Mirthimus.
Mirthimus, the infamous.
BC, what have you been doing? Come on, buddy. Tell us.
What have I been doing?
For games.
Thought I told you guys what I've been doing. I've got a
better than that.
Yeah, I know. I've been doing that that Night Fighter Ace AAR in the forums. I haven't gotten to it in a while because my work is really ramped up lately, and all those files are on my laptop, so I can't exactly play that game while I'm working anymore. Not that I was in the first place. That was a joke. I'm supposed to laugh.
We laughed at the funny ones.
I like the AAR. Come on.
Thanks. Yeah, so I broke down and bought.
That guy at Compass, by the way.
What, Night Fighter Ace?
The designer, dude.
Gregory Smith. Gregory
Amps. He's actually a very cool
guy. Yeah, I'm friends with him on Facebook. He's a very nice guy. He's very quick to answer questions, too.
He was very easygoing in person.
Very good. Yeah, so I also broke down and bought Interceptor Ace, which is the daylight version of that game, of that system. Same designer, too, Gregory Smith. It's pretty much the same thing. I mean, it's a little bit more complicated, I think, because there's dogfighting rules in it that are rather interesting. So it adds that aspect where you're dogfighting allied fighters.
So when you're talking daylight versus night raid, like, do you play with the lights on versus off? Like, what's the key shtick here that differentiates the two?
Really? Are you just reaching now, man? Come on.
Yes. This is the last episode of the season. We are out of good jokes. You are stuck with the jokes we've got.
All right.
I think the budget was blown after 5 minutes of the first episode.
Come off.
Either way, I guess it'd be kind of hard to play in the dark, but what to each his own. The interesting thing is the Night Fighter Ace material is all very Night Fighter-ish. I mean, all the components are dark. There's a map of Europe that's dark. The Interceptor Ace side of things, it's all daylight, so you got the bright map of Europe and everything's lighter. Obviously, it's an obvious design choice, but I really appreciate that they did that and not just did something flat and the same. Gregory Smith also designed America Bomber, Evil Queen of the Skies. That's their one other game I have on pre-order right now, which says December of 2019. Hopefully that is the case. That's another one I'm interested in doing. You know, I thought that for the longest time I didn't want to play games on rails. It actually started to piss me off at a point where I'm playing a game that I'm just, okay, roll, look at this table. Okay, go to here, roll, go to this table. Ad nauseum, over and over and over again, without any decisions being made. And in these ones, you're actually making decisions. You're deciding what kind of a plane you want to fly. You're deciding if you want to push an attack on a bomber or if you want to break off. You're deciding all these things. And it's kind of a push your luck mechanic too. So your plane gets damaged. Do you push on and keep patrolling, hoping to down another bomber or what? And the Interceptor Aces, it's a lot more dangerous because they can see you coming as opposed to night fighting, which you can actually sneak up on the bombers if you're lucky enough to get under them or behind them and have a go at them. Whereas here they can see it coming a mile away. So, I haven't gotten actually a chance to put it through its paces yet, but I've got it all laid out and ready to try. I'm hoping this weekend I'll actually have some time for that. And then other than that, I'm looking at Lock and Load's Wake Island, which is a really interesting subject matter to me. I just recently read a book, and I can't remember the damn title of it, but it was written by the commander of the American garrison, Marine garrison, at the time when Wake Island was invaded by the Japanese at the start of World War II. And it's just a fascinating battle to me. And this game is a solo game. So I think if we play two-player also, but it's very simple, very light, very clean, and I really like that. So that's another thing that I really want to try. But then, you know, I look over at my closet here to my right, and I'm seeing other Compass games, Zeppelin Raider, that's another one I bought that I haven't played yet, and Pacific Tide, another one that I bought and I haven't played yet. And both, by the way, are Gregory Smith games. And I think I joked with him on Facebook. I said, you know, I might as well just give you access to my bank account and let you just withdraw what when you want it. When you, I got another game. Here you go. Here, I'm going to take this from you. So, I don't know. I don't know. I think I'm getting to a point where I'm saturated with games. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because it's the same thing you said 5 years ago, and then 5 years before that.
No, hell with that. Well, that's the thing. I
binge and purge, baby.
I sold a crap load of games last year when I moved. At Christmas time the year before, I donated like 40 games to this charity. I got rid of so many games, and I still have a closet full here, and I still have 13 boxes in climate-controlled storage. They're not full of games, but there's quite a few there. It's just like, how did I get all these? When did I get this? When did I get that? I mean, I've been a reviewer for many years, so a lot of that is review stuff I don't want to sell. I think a lot of this I'm going to try to give to my daughter's boyfriend, actually. Here, you want to be a war gamer? Here, you know, you might try this DVG game or you know, anything else that I've gotten for free over the years that I just don't have room for on my shelves anymore. That's the other thing, too, is like talking about giving away DVG games. They're all great games. I mean, seriously, the Phantom Leader, Tiger Leader, Sherman Leader, Corsair Leader, Fleet Commander Nimitz. I love all those games. It's like, when am I ever going to get a chance to play them again? I don't know.
Well, you would have to tell us when you would get a chance to play them again.
It's analysis paralysis of a sort. I mean, you sit there back in the day. Okay, you're talking about what your first war game was with Chris there. The first one I ever bought was Luftwaffe, but I didn't really take it too seriously. I mean, I didn't play it a lot. My first real serious war game was Advanced Third Reich, like Chris just said. And that game pissed me off because it was so complicated, at least to me at the time. I was 19 at the time, so I'm trying to figure out, especially the
economics. It was complicated. So, like, okay. It's not just because you were 19. It was complicated.
It was a pain in the ass, yeah. So but I persevered with it. You know, nowadays, if I had a game like that, I'd go, screw this, and I'd just put it on the shelf and pick any one of the other 150 games I have. But back then, you know, you make $3.25 an hour minimum wage and buy a game, and it's like, that's an investment. That's a major investment for you. And maybe not so much I mean, it still is these days, but it's disposable income of a sort. But back then, that's your livelihood. And I buy Advanced Third Reich. Well, damn it, I'm going to play Advanced Third Reich. Same with World in Flames. I did that. Ambush was another early acquisition of mine that I played to death. I mean, that's the thing. You buy the game, you play it to death. These days, oh, that's cool, I'll buy that. Oh, that's cool, I'll buy that. Oh, that's cool, I'll buy that. I'll get around to it sooner or later. And when's that sooner or later going to be? You know? Like Chris, like you, for example. You've got MBT. Have you played that at all?
The new MBT? Yeah. Well,
you have? Okay. How many expansions do you have for that thing now?
Several.
Yeah, see, it's the thing. You know, you found it shiny and you love it, and so you keep buying the expansions for it, and you've actually played it, but it's like...
Well, the other hand with that, I've actually played that as a miniatures game.
That's cool.
I played that as a miniatures game before I played it as a board game, so... And I own it. I mean, don't get me
wrong. I didn't know that was a minis game before.
Well, Panzer was a mini. That was I mean, the rules are available as a minis game, and it's available as a board game. I mean, mm-hmm. So I bought it because I bought the expansions. I want the cards.
Yeah, I was gonna say you guys are basically using the data cards for your minis game, right?
Well, yes, that's exactly what's happening. To BC's credit, I have four of them sitting in front of me in shrink wrap. I bought them. I played the game many times. I mean, I honestly, as much as I love it, I mean, I played as a board game, but I bought it for the fucking data cards for the miniatures game.
Yeah.
But hey, like I said, you're still using it, though. You're using something of it.
Oh my God, yes. No.
It's performing a purpose.
Whether we play it as a miniatures game or as a board game, that doesn't matter to me. I've been playing it as a miniatures game far longer than a board game. And I mean, I could go back decades. I actually have the original Avalon Hill versions of the game.
I've been tempted by MBT and Panzer, but I just never pulled the trigger on it. Now Tank Duel comes out, and I'm like, but
you should do Tank Duel. Tank Duel will serve you well. You're not gonna do solo on fucking Panzer or MBT. Tank Duel, you'll love Tank Duel.
I think I would too. I wish there was a campaign element too, and I understand that might be an expansion. So I'm just kind of still hesitant.
Trust me, I played Tank Duel, and I thought I was gonna hate it, and I liked it way more than I thought I was gonna. Nope.
That's a good recommendation.
Well, I'm not. I mean, come on. I'm just as a that tactical tank commanding a tank. That's not my how I. I mean, I'd rather do that as a ministry.
Right.
But Tank Tool is actually very, very interesting as a tactical game.
I mean, it looks like Patton's Best is what it looks like, but I know it's nothing like that.
Well, I never played Patton's Best, so I can't say that. I mean, I think I agree with you. I mean, I theoretically understand what Patton's Best is about. It's just I've played that game several times now, and it's very interesting to play as a game. It's not something I ever thought I was going to enjoy as a game. So I played it. I had fun with it. I mean, even now, would I buy it? I can't say I would buy it, but if somebody sat down in front of me, I would play it.
Yeah.
You know, as someone who's interested in doing those kinds of games, I can especially see it as a solo game. I mean, it's ideal for that. So I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it for what it was. And people that are interested in it, I absolutely think they should get it. It's a very elegantly designed. The design principles behind that game are well thought out. I will absolutely say
it. I'll add it to my list. I think The Hunted is actually going to the printers here pretty soon. I'm in for that on the P500. And then Mr. President, I probably won't see that till this time next year. In the meantime, if I can get rid of Tide of Iron, shoot, maybe I'll go out there and buy it.
I don't know. If people are interested in Tangle, should they get Tangle? Because it's a very well-designed game. I mean,
without looking at the BGG page, how many tanks are in the game, roughly? You're talking Soviet and German and American or what?
I don't know. I didn't count through it. I don't own it. I mean, I played a game with, like, friggin' JS2s and Tigers and Panthers, and it was fantastic.
Well, that's what I was wondering, if it was just mainly Russian and German, or if there's other nationalities in there. Like, if they bothered with the Italians, or...
So, it's predominantly Russians and Germans.
Gotcha.
The whole thing is going to be inches and this and that, and that's where they're going to be.
I have to say, it's a
very well-done game. The components are fantastic. It actually plays out very well for what it is. And that to me, is the big thing. It's not something I would normally be interested in. For that scale, I would play a miniature, but it played out very well for what it was. I'm not going to knock people for liking it, because it's a pretty cool game.
Have you bought it yet?
No, I haven't. I'm not going to buy it. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not going to buy it. But,
sure.
Yeah, what? Fuck all of you. The thing is, I understand the appeal behind it. I know why people have bought it. I have a buddy who has it, and he's going to buy all the expansions, and I'll play it with him. That's the bottom line. And the thing is, it's a great game. It's a very well done game.
Good.
So for everyone that wants to get Tank Duel, they absolutely should, and I think they'll have a fun time. And I think it's a great con game. I think it's a very, it's a very thing where you can line up a competition and do it out. You know, I've heard talk about that. It's for all of that stuff. I think it's very, very well suited.
And there aren't too many games like that out there right now. I mean, I mentioned Patton's Best, but that came out 30 years ago.
That's very true. I mean, I'm into, like, uber-heavy Hex Encounter stuff, and, I think Tank Duel has a lot going, and I think it's going to be a very, very popular game for DMT.
So you're coming to Origins this year to run it, is that what I heard?
Sure, yeah, exactly.
Because it's such a great con game?
You can read whatever you want into that. testing.
Well, you mentioned that it would be a great con game, so.
It would be. Not that I'm going to run it, but it would be a great con game.
Doesn't GMT go to Origins?
Sort of. They are represented there by Enterprise Games. So Enterprise has an exclusivity deal with GMT, and I know GMT provides some support to Enterprise, and through Enterprise some support to us. But GMT does not have a booth there.
A little love. I thought it was a neat little tank game. Blah, blah, blah. Looking for BB Mike to run it at Origins 20.
See? Now we can get you there. Now we have an excuse.
There you go.
Michael, what's So you've talked about a bunch of things you kind of need to play, in part because you got some writing to do on them. What's the first war game you think you're going to try and put in front of the daughter's boyfriend? Uh-oh, he's thinking.
Is he on the line? Hello?
I don't know. There's a lot of silence I got to edit. Michael, we're not hearing you. Uh-oh, his audio's busted.
He doesn't even know. Come on. Oh, wow.
No, he hasn't dropped. That's the whole thing.
Sorry, I keep getting interrupted.
There he is. Yeah, totally not editing that out. First war game you're going to try and introduce the daughter's boyfriend to?
That's a good question. I've got a lot of solo war games, like I said, DVG. It might be that I try to gift him one for Christmas, like I said before, maybe one of the DVG ones. But, gosh, I really don't have a lot of two-player war games. I'm looking at my collection here. I got a lot of war games, but I also got a lot of regular games like Robinson Crusoe or Star Wars Outer Rim, Role Player.
Is it Horrified. The point that you get him to play the games that you want to play?
Well, yeah, pretty much. I mean, he's down to play just about anything, and it's actually been good because if he wasn't in the picture, then I probably wouldn't be even playing these things. I mean, Wingspan, I bought just kind of on a lark, pun, but he was. It was $54, and this game retails for $80-$90, sometimes more. So I found it really lucky. So, you know, and he says, hey, let's play it. Okay, let's do that. Otherwise, it would have just sat there, probably never been played. They do want to play Gloomhaven. I know that's another thing, but that's not a word, obviously. Maybe Unconditional Surrender would be a good one. That's a GMT game, and it's a pretty simple one. Wing Leader might be another one. I've got that as well. I've not played that yet.
Do you have any of the tank on tanks in the lock and load care package that was sent?
No. But I think that I think he's going to send that in a second shipment. Let me see.
I'm sorry. Where do you live?
I'm sorry. Where do I live? Peoria.
In the Phoenix area.
Yep.
Where there are like how many 5 million people?
No, it's more like 2 or 3.
And you can't find anyone to play with.
There's plenty of people that just don't live on this side of town. Most of them are on the far east side of the valley.
He's not in town for the war game.
I know, too. My job's over there, too, so isn't that great? My commute is nearly an hour every day each way, usually longer in the afternoon. Wah, as Brant would say, wah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking it really hard right now.
People to play games with it at some point.
You guys just are just dying for me to play with a game group, aren't you?
We have your best interest at heart.
Socialization, though, man, I don't know. That's kind of weird. Like talking to people, like in person. I mean, I don't know.
I live in a metro area 1/10 of your size, and I manage to meet people. So.
Well, yeah, you got gaming groups like at the Wazoo up there too.
Yeah, in the area 1/10 of your size.
You know why he's got those gaming groups? Because he went out and found those gaming groups.
Wow, oh my God, Brant kind of nailed it right there.
I've gone and looked. There's nobody out here. I've looked for game groups in the West Valley, North Valley. They're just not out here.
You could always start one.
I've looked at meetups. Oh, I've looked on Facebook. I've looked everywhere.
You could always start one. Just show up at the FLGS some Saturday and just drop a game on the table with a little sign, you know, will game for food.
Well, that's the other thing. There aren't very many of those in this area either. They're all in the center part of town or further east.
So, Chris, what it really sounds like is that Michael just did a shit job of figuring out where to buy a house.
Pretty much.
No.
It's a nice part.
He doesn't want a game.
I got mountain views. I got a mountain at the end of my street. It's a beautiful neighborhood. So it's out there, but I like where I am.
My my metro area is 1/10 of his, and I have a regular gaming group whenever I want it. So.
Well, la-di fucking da.
I'm not trying to sell any games or anything else.
On that note, we will adjourn until the next season, at which time Michael will come back with a fresh set of excuses as to why he hasn't found a game group, and Chris will regale us with the tales of all of the games that he's played over the course of the next, you know, month and a half before we come back around to season. So, yeah, you're going to have to keep a list going. The fun part of this, of course, is that Chris will have played 24 games in, you know, 20-odd game group meetings, and he will still have the same stack of unopened, unpunched, unclipped GMT games piled up on his dining room table.
No, I'll have a much larger group of unclipped, unpunched, unclipped.
Yeah. So, to our audience, thank you for joining us through season 3 of Mentioned in Dispatches. Season 4 will start.
Season 3.
Keep in mind, too, we get 2 seasons out of a calendar year because we have a fall and a spring season.
I know. I've been doing this for a while.
I know.
We need to find better contestants. Come on, Michael. Step up.
Yeah, I know, right? I should play some games or something.
Bring your son-in-law or whatever.
Yeah, slow down.
They just got to college.
Graduate and find a job.
Yeah, they just got to college, Chris. Slow down there. Because otherwise we're going to be making fun of you about it here in about 2 years.
Shut up.
So.
I tried to bring Gary in.
It's not that Gary's elusive. Guess what Gary's doing tonight instead of being on a podcast?
Playing some fucking game.
Gary, as Gary likes to brag, you know, it's hashtag humble brag. The only reason he doesn't play more OCS games during the week is he's out of time rather than being out of game groups. So,
isn't he married though? I mean, how does he do that?
Who knows?
Next year, I'm going to pry more closely into Gary's personal life.
Which Gary are you talking about?
Mangle. Aardwolf.
Oh, okay.
Aardwolf, our the good buddy, friend of the regiment, frequent Origins denizen. There have been times where I really think Gary was just going to bring like a little pop-up tent and set it up next to our spot at Origins because he spent so much time there.
He was at Gumpuscon.
Yes. Yes, he was. And he camps out at Buckeye Game Fest pretty regularly, too. So, all right, guys, thank you. It's been fun. Let's, audience, go enjoy your holidays. Go spend money on the Black Friday sales, which you'll be listening to about the time this recording drops. And everybody, come back to the forums over the holidays and report what, if any, gaming goodness you picked up either through gifts or through self-gifting. For the holidays, and come join us for the madcap hilarity that we call our forums, and hope everyone has a happy new year, and we'll talk to you on the other side of the calendar when it won't just be hindsight that's 2020. I told you the jokes weren't going to be very good at this point.
Go hunt for Red October TSR.
Yeah, state of the art of 35 years ago. Woo!